Hello, everybody, and welcome to our podcast, Unpacking Organizations. Hi, Rupert. How are you today?
I'm great, Shredda. How are you?
Doing very well. Doing very well.
So we've had an interesting question, which I think you might be interested in giving our listeners some thoughts about.
What is it?
It's a term that came up, I think, I don't know how long ago now, maybe 10 years ago now, I can't remember, the gig economy and how do we think about org design for the gig economy.
Unpacking Organizations, the Practitioners Podcast, sponsored by OrgView.
If I take that a little bit further and we say not just the gig economy, but temporary versus permanent staff, contractors, even suppliers. So thinking of the whole labor ecosystem, not just the permanent, and a huge number of different, you know, different takes on that and different tools that we can use. So what are your thoughts and what have you seen?
Great question. And I think it's becoming more and more permanent, the gig economy, because especially with pandemic, there were so many digital nomads. And with technology becoming such a big part of our organization and work, people can work from anywhere. So gig economy and temporary workers is becoming a big part of every organization. The challenge is that when we do org design, many a times in my past as management consulting life or even in industry, we usually take the gig economy out of the org design equation. Or we give them a little bit of, say, a weightage that 10 gig economy workers equal to permanent, because that's the nature of the control or management oversight that we would be needing for them. I feel that there is more to it than just equating them to a full-time employees. And I think that is what I would love to talk about that, right? Like when we are thinking about gig economy, it's about what is the work that needs to be done by how many hours by these number of people. So I think, Rupert, you talk about it, is that which role should be permanent, which role should are okay to have gig economy workers or gig workers. And so that's one point. But that if we take a step back to that, it is like, do we even understand the work in the first place? Because if we don't understand the work, if we don't have a really good roadmap of what we want to do, it's very difficult to deploy a gig worker against a role, against a work. What do you think, Rupert?
I agree with that. I'll just add, if you take on someone, say, that's temporary worker, so gig or a contractor, you're still responsible for the outcome and the quality of that work. There's another option, which is outsourcing the work to a supplier. And so then you're bundling more work together. And, you know, the old adage, don't outsource a mess, is, I think, is absolutely right. But so when do you keep control of the work and have someone temporary doing it? Because you need the flexibility and certain roles, it's hard to forecast the demand. So let's say you have a role where it's driven a lot by the weather. So we had a client a few years ago, and they had to do their resourcing. So they needed really sophisticated weather forecasting software because they were so dependent on the weather. So when it was sunny, the demand would go up hugely, and when it wasn't, it wouldn't. And in between, and so planning that process, and they needed long, you can pay, and a lot of people like in consumer goods and whatever, you pay for really much better forecasts for the weather. And then you need temporary labor solution because it's too expensive to keep a permanent staff on, right, for the one beautiful day in the year. So, you know, particularly if you live in, you know, certain parts of the world. And so... And then when do you say, well, this problem is, it's not right that we solve it. Someone else is better, and we bundle it and outsource. And So to me, it's a whole continuum of augmenting the workforce. Maybe you can't find the talent, so you would want to make it permanent, but the labor market, the supply market is more contractor based, and a lot of that in the world of design and branding, and you know, there's a lot of that's done through contractors, advertising, or you have small. So it's a whole mix, and I think it's back to your point: understand the work, and then understand what's needed, and then what is the best solution for solving that. And one thing that I think, particularly at the smaller end of the scale, but also in the big end, a lot of people's egos are driven by how many people they have in their team. And
so there
is a hidden bias for perm.
Hmm.
Because
that's a great
you
point.
Can puff out your chest and say, well, I've got 300 people in my team. I've got 2,000 in mine. I've got whatever the number is, 30, whatever, you know, wherever you are on that ego trip. I think we just need to acknowledge that ego plays a role, and so there is a drive for perm based purely on that, and it's not always the right answer. You know, it's costly, right? It's not just the cost of the wages and the pension and what have you. It's the management costs, it's the training, it's the duty of care, right? If they're sick, you have that duty of care. So now, obviously, some people might say, well, you know, in the UK, there's a whole thing called zero-based hours. So what that is that you take someone on, but you basically don't agree how many hours they're going to pay. And, you know, there are instances where, a lot of instances, and it's quite political, where that power is abused. So with this gig economy moved to zero based, and actually a lot of people have no certainty, and it's very hard to get mortgages and things if you don't have a permanent income. In the US, healthcare is drives everything. So I also think that there is a lens here, which is what's right for the business and what makes sense from an economic and an organization design perspective. What is the supply market, but also how are we treating people and are we doing that effectively? And that's as much of a political view. And obviously that's not the scope of this podcast, but I do think it's important for people to think about that and to be conscious of the decisions that you're making both ways. So
yes, agreed totally. And I think therefore the request that I have for the practitioners is that don't outrightly take out the gig workers out of the org design equation. Actually, if we think about it in the way that we understand the work first, and then we understand that what kind of worker that we need there, do we need a permanent one or a gig, and then help design that whole organization, I think it will be more inclusive. And it will take away a little bit of notch of the politics and ego out of the design, if I dare say that. But also it will be more.
I think you can definitely dare talk about the ego. I think we're in safe ground. And we should just all admit that we're human as well.
Yeah, you know. Those are the counts that we do, right? And so... Yeah. So definitely those ways, I feel that as we start org design, consider gig as a part of your overall system. Just don't take them out, but also have really good resources to help you. So Rupert, to our previous conversation, if the organization is large enough, have a really good capacity management platform. Because without that, it just goes into a really bad vicious cycle of you don't understand how many gigs do you have, they're not part of your ecosystem, and therefore you're not able to give them the minimum benefits that you can even allow them to have based on the local labor laws. So all of that needs to be thought through, and more when the organizations as well as the people are warming up to have more gig workers.
Cool. I think we've done this. What is your takeaway, Shraddha?
I think my takeaway is that philosophically consider gig workers as a part of your workforce? Give them as many benefits as you can, use them and include them in as many decision makings you can. It's not that they should be considered separate. I know there are so many ways to think about it that they add on to the complexity of the workforce, and therefore they should be kept separate for the simplicity of it. But it will be more powerful to think through if you're there part of your day-to-day exercise of workforce planning. So make them as much part of the ecosystem as you can, as it allows to be. Yeah. That's my takeaway. What's your, Rupert?
I think practically, if you're doing this at scale, your point about having systems and capacity planning, resource management systems, this is at the tactical level. So we've talked about strategic, operational, tactical. This is the the resource management tactical level, I think, and the processes around that. And don't just get caught up on the word gig. There's a whole plethora of ways of thinking about demand and supply, and there can be a whole range, you know, contractors that have, you know, a number of hours per, you know, you could put someone on a 10-hour contract per month.
Right.
And give them some degree of certainty. You can go and outsource and have a supplier take it. So there's a whole spectrum of solutions. And it's important to think about all of those in terms of demand and supply. And I guess the other one is just, without being political, but just think about the consequences. You know, if it's really a permanent role and someone's going to be working there, I guess I would say just be mindful that they have families and you can't get mortgages, and in the US you don't have healthcare. And, you know, there is a huge value for people for being perm. Having said that, there is a lot of hidden cost as well of taking on a perm. A lot of hidden cost. So just bear all of this in mind. Well, this was fun. Thanks for the question, our listener. And other listeners, please keep – these are the nicest ones to do, actually, is when we get questions through and we can just chat about them. So keep the questions coming. And until next time, Shadow, thanks a lot.
Take care, Rupert. Thank you so much. Bye now.
Unpacking Organizations, the Practitioners Podcast, sponsored by OrgView.